fucking awesome. Come on, it's gonna be fucking awesome.
You know the words.
It's gonna be fucking awesome.
That's it, see.
It's gonna be fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Hey ho, howdy, howdy, howdy. Jesse Blaze Snyder here. Waka, waka, waka. What's up, my friends? How you doing? Love you. Thank you for joining me on another cool episode of The Coolest Geek Alive. I am your host, Jesse Blaze Snyder. The Coolest Geek Alive. That is me. You are my listeners, the coolest geeks alive. Because you have the information. I lay it all out. You've got it. You know what I know. Well, as much as I can give you. It's so crazy. I was thinking the other day, like, I should try to put some of these, like, not like take the actual episodes, but some of the information, because I spread so much information out throughout so many episodes, and there's so many things that I give out that I think are just like really important and great for writers, because really that's the perspective that I give everything to you from as a writer. You know, whether I'm writing songs or whether I'm writing comic books, it's all ultimately the same thing, you know, just trying to connect with an audience and really, you know, give them what they want. I'm somebody who believes, you know, that essentially the audience is always right. You know, that, you know, an idea, a thing that you want to say or do is generated from inside of you. And if you feel it very strongly, you should do it. You should make it. But that's where you stop. As a creative person, that's where you stop. You are the genesis. You are the, ooh, wouldn't it be interesting if, you know, right now we have a great concept. We're shooting a video for it for DILF USA, which, by the way, DILF USA just put out our video, Money Ain't Funny, which is like a lampoon of the WGA strikes. I think it's really fucking funny. Me and my girl Julie did it together. Like, it was our first video that we didn't use any of my pro friends that I, like, have worked on other shows with or whatever. And, it came out really great. So check that out. It's on the DILF USA YouTube and on the Blacklight District Studios YouTube. Money Ain't Funny, DILF USA. It's really awesome. But we're shooting a video right now called We Gave an Alligator Mushrooms. And conceptually, you know, this was something that I had a bug up my ass to make. You know, and the lyrics and melody kind of just came out of me. But I didn't have the rest of the chorus. I wasn't sure what it was, you know. So at a certain point, you have to push yourself over to the creative process in the case of a song, right? But it's the same thing for a film or a comic book or whatever, you know. So now I pass on these pieces to Robbie, my guitar player, and now Robbie sends me a bit, and it's not exactly what I was expecting in terms of, you know, I thought we had the chorus maybe. And now I'm realizing that it's a verse and he's built a chorus. And now I create a new chorus, you know, kind of based on some pieces that he gives to me, which initially I'm like, it wasn't exactly what I was expecting. You know, the creative process of the thing, ultimately, you have to work in cooperation with the people who you're collaborating with. And then at the end of the day, too, it's all about making it sound good to the audience and choosing, you know, the right music that's going to support it in a positive way that the audience is going to connect with. You know, you can have your story mean whatever it means, but if your dialogue is completely crap and clunky and there's nothing visually interesting going on, and you're not playing to your page turns in a comic book or playing to your commercial breaks in a television show, or you know, building suspense and giving the proper, like, arc of, you know, three-act arc, you know, traditional three-act arc of a film, you're not going to have an audience. You know, so you have the idea and the, ooh, this is my fun idea, I like this. But then you have to open yourself up to the process, and you have to be cooperative with the process and in collaboration with others. And, you know, comic books is kind of one of the smallest amount of people in collaboration, which is why it's so wonderful and why it's the best medium, because it is can be, you know, me and Steve Kurth, we're about to launch our comic book Fucking for Our Future, me and Steve essentially did that all by ourselves, just he and I. You know, with the Kickstarter, I did Photoshopping and all the other stuff, and he colored the book and lettered the book. You know, the covers, we brought in a friend that we found online who we really liked his colors, you know, to do some of our covers. But two people, you know, two people in cahoots, we essentially did everything. It's pretty cool, right? As you go up into, when you're a novel writer, you're still in cahoots with a certain amount of people because, you know, usually you have an editor or whatnot. But at the same time, you could do it by yourself and you could put out a novel. Novels are the hardest things to get people to read. You know, it's hard to get people to watch your movie and check out your things sometimes. Because, you know, especially if people like you, people don't want to not like the thing. I'm like, I don't want to see it, not like it, and then have to tell you I didn't like it. You know, it's real. These are the problems that artists have. But the point of all the things is the idea is important. And that idea will come from you. And if you feel it strongly, you are not the only one. So when you're writing for yourself, you're writing for yourself safely in the knowledge that if I feel it strongly, that means there is an audience. That means other people probably feel this strongly as well. And, you know, and the way that works is, you know, if you're, there's a great book called The Field that basically explains how everything is connected by energetic fields all across planet Earth. And we feel things. Like that is an energetic consciousness, like a beehive or a thing, like, you know, poles shift and opinions change. You know, right now there's a major shift going from left wing to right wing that's been taking place slowly over time. But now all of a sudden you see pretty major as the mainstream is getting involved and saying a lot of the things that the fringe has been saying for quite a long time. So there's like this energetic shift that's happening because basically people are feeling the peer pressure, right? And what does it ultimately mean? Well, actually, there's another example of this too. People getting ideas, the same ideas at the same time. There's three movies out with the same concepts, same studios, same scripts. Like, you know, ideas are in the ether, you know, all of them. Ideas of what we like, ideas of what we want, they're there. So when you feel something very strongly, it's okay to selfishly go ahead with that baseline idea, because ultimately what that means is you're feeling it strongly. You're tuning in to not just yourself, but others. Other people feel this way. We all feel this way, right? So that's great. But that's the end of the narcissism in creative process. And then it becomes, how do I make this great? You know, if I'm telling a Thor story, how do I make Thor look great? How do I make Blade look great? How do I make Wolverine, you know, his awesome self based on this kernel of this story that I feel passionate about that I want to tell, right? Anyway, I'm going to probably do a episode that is dedicated to talking about just writing and process and I don't know, as soon as I find like a good angle to approach it from, I'm going to. So I'm thinking about it. Anyway, I'm also like going to be continuing my positive vibes on the channel. I don't know if anybody caught this weekend's episode, Animal World. Holy fuck. Animal World is so awesome. It's a Chinese movie. It's really, 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 really dope. You can watch it on YouTube for free right now. Even if you don't listen to that episode, just go watch Animal World. It's fucking awesome. It's one of the best things that's come out in the past 10 years. Okay. So today we are talking about Sony and their Spider-Verse and what they are doing versus what they should be doing. All right. They recently announced a while ago, and I think it's still in the offing, a fucking film adaptation version of a character from Spider-Man called El Muerto. I am very well versed in Spider-Man. I have no fucking clue who that is. I think my friend Aaron, who's, you know, he's been reading like maybe two generations longer than me in comics, because I think maybe he started a little earlier than me. So I think he had some knowledge. He was like, yeah, this is like a spider, but it's not like a popular fucking character. This isn't somebody that people are clamoring to see. There's not many El Muerto series for them to be basing this shit on, which is, you know, this is the whole problem here too. It's like, you're doing shit that, like, Madam Web, this movie that they just put out. One, Madam Web was not a good choice, period. They should not have chosen Madam Web. It was just a bizarre choice. The authentic idea behind Madam Web is that she's this old blind psychic lady, you know, who ties in with Spider-Man, you know, basically. And this is the big problem with the majority of the things that you guys want to do or have access to or whatever else. They all tie in with Spider-Man. You know, Venom is better with Spider-Man. It's great to get some aspects of Venom right because Venom is interesting in his own right, but also Venom is much more interesting with Spider-Man. The story of Eddie Brock and you know, essentially Eddie represented Flash Thompson coming into the photography world. High school never ends. Here's Peter Parker again being bullied by this dude pushing him down and breaking his camera and trying to get Spider-Man pictures instead of him. And it brings out something really petty in Peter. And this whole, especially because of the black suit costume that he's dealing with. And basically when this costume comes off of him, it gets to Venom, and Eddie Brock and Venom become this great heel for Spider-Man because he's this hulking bully, you know, this larger character who no longer sets off Spider-Man's spider sense, so he can sneak up on him unlike every other character under the sun. And he's genuinely dangerous and deranged, and we see what had happened to Spider-Man, a good guy. Little do we imagine what's happening to Eddie Brock, who's not such a good guy. All of that story is great. You know, see, it's been retold in cartoons and stuff different ways, and a very shitty version of it is told in Spider-Man 4, because you get that Topher Grace character who's just sort of like a shitty mirror image of Peter Parker, which is not the same archetype that Venom is meant to be. So, not a big fan of that Spider-Man 4 Venom. You know, of course, we get some amount of this hulking Venom that's, you know, taking over your mind kind of thing in the Venom films, which are, I guess, mindless fun. The second one of that really aggravated me. The Carnage character in that thing, if you haven't read the comics, I mean, essentially the complete opposite. Shriek is obsessed with him. He's like, he can't love. Like, he's like just this fucking maniac. Hated the depiction of him in that. Like, the movie's okay. I don't know. Dumb. Mostly dumb. Okay, so you got Madam Web here. And it's interesting because, so, I've read a lot of these comics. So you've got Maddie Franklin in the Madam Web thing. And Maddie Franklin is a Spider-Man character. I read some of her issues. It wasn't the strongest character. She wasn't black. And it wasn't awesome. Then they did this this Spanish girl, Ariana or Arana, I think is like a Spanish for spider kind of thing. I kind of like that book. I used to read things with my children in mind, and I used to read things with, even before I had children, I would read things with my children in mind because I would think I'd love to get them in the comic books. What are, you know, some good things to get them in? And Arana was really kind of cool. She didn't have a typical Spider-Man costume. She was like, you always had like a backpack on and like a t-shirt and a mask and kind of funky. I think over time they did like give her some sort of costume or whatever. But she was really cool. She was this like scrappy Spanish girl with Spider-Man powers. And quite liked her. She wasn't in a team book with Madame Web and all these other characters, she was a little girl with spider powers trying to figure out her shit. And that was cool. I might have liked to see that movie, Arana. She's in the Madame Web movie, but like I'm, you know, no interest in that because this isn't anything that they've ever done. Like, that's not a book that I've ever read. That's not a book I was asking you to make. They just kind of piecemealed something together that they thought would appeal to ladies. But the ladies seem even less interested than the men when they feminize masculine stuff. And you can go look at the numbers online to, like, the audience, like Marvels and stuff like that. Even less women showed up. More men, a higher percentage of men have shown up to Madame Web and these things. Because basically there's a certain amount of brand loyalty from men who have traditionally bought these comics and have an awareness for these things. Like, I actually know who these spider women are. And then the Julia Carpenter spider woman, who's like the nerdy chick who everybody thinks is really hot. Sweeney. Largely I've read her, I don't know, in a dozen different, like, team books and things. Maybe I've read a miniseries with her or something like that. But generally speaking, I haven't been around when she's had a lot of, like, solo stuff. She's a character that hasn't ever really taken off, but you kind of sometimes like to see her because she's likable in her portrayals in the comic books. But she's not great, not really well defined as an individual character. She's like a team character. She's one of the people who makes the most sense here. The Maddie Franklin Spider-Girl was, like, short-lived because it wasn't really very good. It was very interesting. So that one, it's like, okay. And then Ariana was good, and she could have did maybe a movie. Maybe it did, like, an Ariana movie with Madame Web and did Madame Web, like, for reals. I don't know. I don't even know why you need fucking Madame Web. Madame Web is like such a... Madame Web is nothing. Like, Madame Web is nothing that, like, anybody really gives a shit about. At all. When they announced that movie, there was just laughter from me and all my friends. And my friends being people who actually read comics and buy the shit. And they're like, they're in a Madame... You know, it's like if, like, before Lord of the Rings was made and you know, and people didn't have, like, a familiarity with it, and they were like, yeah, man, they're doing a movie about Gimli's cousin. I don't know. Like, some fucking, like, who? Oh yeah, Madame Web from some of those stories. Okay. Yeah, She's not our favorite. She's not, like, on, like, the top tier list of Spider-Man characters. This was not a good choice. And then meanwhile, what was maybe a great choice was Kraven, but not the way they did it. I don't know if you've seen the trailers, but they've reimagined him as a fucking animal rights guy. He's a hunter. He's a fucking hunter, guys. He is the guy posing with the giraffe, posing with the lion. That's why we hate him, but we love him because he's so pure in what he is that he's awesome. You just have to lean into that, unfortunately. They're like, well, we can't have him be a fucking guy who hunts animals. What is the point of a Kraven the Hunter who doesn't hunt? What is this shit? Morbius, I enjoyed, actually. I thought, you know, by the time all of the fucking things were said about it, and I tell you guys this all the time, like, if I really think that I'm not going to enjoy something, I won't watch it. But if I'm interested in it and I'm worried I'm not gonna like it, I will listen to everything to like spoil a lot of things for myself, and then I'll go watch it. And a lot of times I find that I really like the thing, or, you know, didn't mind it at all. And I largely like Morbius. I don't think they should be afraid to try to let it rest for a second or whatever, but bring back that character. I think people might be happy to see him under the right circumstances. And I actually have a whole bunch of plans that we're going to get into in a second about, like, you know, how they could turn this ship around just immediately, fix all this stuff. Like, I mean, there's like so many fucking options, really. Just last couple things that I'll say about what they're doing, what they've been doing. So the Into the Spider-Verse cartoons are fucking great. Very, very pleased with that. Granted, the second movie is not close to as good as the first movie. The opening is very bloated with Gwen Stacy's character and her backstory. It's like fucking like 20 minutes, or it feels like it is, before the Spider-Verse credits come up and we move over to Miles Morales. And that for me was like just like and then the end of the movie was fucking anticlimactic as hell. Should have did something to end that movie excited, like in an excited way, and not just like, you know, like dun dun dun, like fuck you movie. But they're beautiful, they're awesome. I'm with it. Okay. The last Spider-Man movie was great. This Kraven thing is an abomination. Madame Web was a terrible idea to start. El Morte, are you fucking kidding me? Silver Sable and Black Cat, I think, was something that they were talking about. I think they should go all in on Silver Sable, and they shouldn't put Black Cat in there. I think that Black Cat should be saved for something else. I'm going to get into that in a second. I don't think any of these ideas are going to set the world on fire in any way, shape, or form. But I believe that you, Sony, you can set the world on fire. Do you want to know how? Okay, here goes. Well, the very first thing that I would recommend is Ultimate Universe Miles Morales Spider-Man adaptation. Your movie literally starts on the death of Spider-Man. That's the trailers, and Miles Morales finds the fucking suit, and gets the powers and his whole origin. I haven't read these books in a long time, but they were great. They were genuinely great. Ultimate Spider-Man was awesome, and it put forth all sorts of very interesting and different versions of Spider-Man's rogues gallery into the universe that Miles Morales comes up against. He also comes up against the Prowler. Bringing the Prowler to life on the big screen would be amazing. So you get Prowler established, you get Miles Morales established, Ultimate Spider-Man dies and a thing, and then you get that world and those ultimate versions of the characters based on the comics that people read. They were really great. These comic books are beloved. They have been reprinted and printed, you know, time and time again. You can get an easy trilogy out of this. You get a trilogy out of Miles Morales and make him fucking awesome, right? Meanwhile, you launch, and I guess I'll save that one for a second. You don't plan a trilogy, but once you get Miles Morales and you did it right and everybody's happy, you announce a sequel to that, and you announce Gwen Stacy, Spider-Gwen, Ghost Spider, whatever you want to call her. Ghost Spider, I think, is maybe the best way, because there are other Spider-Woman and whatnot, and you don't want to cannibalize that IP. And Ghost Spider's cute. Her costume's so great. Now, she's largely a visual IP, but she is something where a lot of great artists have come in and reimagined various villains from her stuff. So there's some things that have been put down. I'm sure I haven't read a lot of them. because she kind of came along afterwards. Spider-Gwen was a weird one. She was a cover variant character that was designed, and the design of the costume was just so damn well done, and the color scheme and everything, that people were just like, this shit's fucking awesome. She ended up kind of like being birthed from that. There's maybe a little bit of wiggle room with, you know, how they want to approach her or whatever. But, you got to try to make her world as unique as possible. I think it's worth going in and doing the Peter Parker, Death of Peter Parker, Gwen Stacy thing, in these alternate universes. Because, you know, it is important. Like, these are the worlds without Peter. And it makes Peter important. I don't be afraid to lean into that. If the Gwen Stacy movie is wildly successful, you bring it back for a sequel. You can do a little world of movies here for her as well. They both are in their own universes. Do not cross them over. Don't cross them over. It'll be tempting. Give them three films each. And if Gwen's movie is like, you know, middle of the road and like people aren't like into it, you just give her one movie. But you continue with Miles's three. Meanwhile, you can do the same thing with, well, sorry, I'm just trying to see what the best way to frame all of this for you guys is as well. I'll say additionally, I think that it's worth doing a Spider-Man noir movie. I think it's worth casting Nicolas Cage and doing something very grounded, very cool, very gritty. You can just go watch any of the classic films that don't cross the R-rated line. You could make something that's awesome and PG-13 and cool and expands this universe. If people really like it, again, you can do some more. And if you do a really good job with this, people will really like it. It's basically like The Shadow. You know, if you do a pulp film with Spider-Man Noir, it could be very cool. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, those fans are already aging. This is like the people who are excited about this. You can take so much of that film and blow it up. Also, I think a Spider-Ham animated film is worth putting the time into. Again, there are some great variations of these characters. Playing up of the variations of the various bad guys and getting in more. Spider-Man has lots more bad guys. Like, really some fun ones. And, there's plenty to play with. They don't work as lead characters themselves. Almost none of them. But they do function great as protagonists. And in this multiverse thing, where you've got an ultimate universe with the Ultimate Spider-Man and Miles Morales' versions of the villains, and Gwen's Stacy's version of her villains from her reality, and the Spider-Man Noir version of the villains from his reality. And the same thing with the Spider-Ham. This creates a situation for fun and crossovers and things. Meanwhile, I say you launch Spider-Man 2099. This you launch with an idea of a trilogy, the end trilogy being some sort of crossover between the Spider-Verses. And if all of this goes well, you know, you do three futuristic Spider-Man movies. They're awesome future versions of these things. You introduce Venom 2099 at the end of the frickin' movie. It'll be great. You can make up some more of your own 2099 Spider-Man villains. It'll be fucking awesome. Super high technology, super cool. And the 2099, know that the 2099 movie's building to something more. And, you know, and you build it to end on like some crazy thing. You know, like you need to be teasing it at the end of Spider-Man 2099 number 2. And then Spider-Man 2099 number 3, it's like all fucking hell breaks loose thing or whatever. And then once that goes good, do a fucking a big app plan, like a multi-part movie of Spider-Verse, you know, and like all these things crossing over and whatnot. By then you'll have a decent blueprint for some of this stuff and like what works really great from the animated the animated film that you've made and from the comic books that have already done this material a number of times now. And there's some great stuff to mine. That's there. That's there for you to do. Okay? And that's plenty. Like, that's a shitload of stuff that I just said. So, I mean, like, you could do that alone. And you're good. However, I think there's more that you could do. I think that Andrew Garfield's universe needs to continue. And I think that's where you bring in Black Cat for a Spider-Man 3. You know, Gwen Stacy died in, you know, Spider-Man 2. Black Cat, he can get involved in whatever. You get some alternative things going on, you know, with Andrew Garfield, and see if you can get, you know, get it right. He's a great Spider-Man, and you've got your own Spider-Man right there. Okay? Additionally, you can continue the Sam Raimi, Tobey Maguire, Spider-Man universe by introducing Mayday Parker, Spider-Girl. She is a Spider-Girl of basically the near future, and, you know, with her mom and dad, who are a little older. You can do a fifth movie to basically wrap up Spider-Man's story, have him sort of retire, have his daughter at whatever age makes sense kind of thing as a baby or whatever else, time going by, and then introduce us to teenage Mayday Parker at the end of the movie, and then follow it up with Spider-Girl, starring Toby and Kirsten Dunst as her parents, and moving the universe forward for the Sam Raimi universe and being able to introduce all that stuff that you guys own from the Spider-Girl series, which is quite beloved. Tom DeFalco and Ron Frenz and who else worked on that shit? I never got into the Spider-Girl book. It was like a little bit into its run when I started like really getting more heavily, becoming a heavier reader. And so it was just like a little intimidating. I always planned on going back around to getting it. And it was kind of part of this whole universe with like this Juggernaut that was a good guy and a couple other characters. Wild Thing was a female Wolverine, had a cool costume. And so I didn't ever read it, but it was very beloved. It went on, I think, like 100 issues and had its own, just its own story world universe that was really good and well liked. You know, there it is. That's something that you could get to. Take two movies and you got Spider-Girl. That's a switching Indiana Jones out for a girl and people won't mind because it's actually based on something we like. I'm sorry, there's like some sort of noise going on outside and I can't necessarily do anything about it. Or maybe I will do something about it for a second. Or nah, fuck it. I'm making you deal with it because it's already quieting down. All right. So I mean, look at that. Like a definite trilogy for Miles Morales Spider-Man, a definite trilogy for 2099 Spider-Man. You could definitely get at least, you know, two movies out of ending Sam Raimi's universe and introducing Spider-Girl in her own movie and see how it goes. Andrew Garfield and Black Cat, I think in particular, for Andrew Garfield, a great place to utilize that character. You think Black Cat has some star power? Awesome. Yeah, do Spider-Man and Black Cat starring Andrew Garfield if you want to. That's kind of cool and sexy. Instead of Spider-Man 3 or whatever. That's cool. Plus, you got the Gwenverse, which I think you could possibly get two or three movies out of that if you do it right. And Spider-Man Noir, I think you get two or three movies out of that. Additionally, Superior Foes of Spider-Man is super fun. You could call it the Sinister Syndicate. You could call it the Sinister Six if you like those bits better. But it is a genuinely funny book, and you would have to make a genuinely funny film. But it's something, you know, along the lines of like a Suicide Squad or whatever else. Like, let's take a look at minor villains and, you know, and have a go at them. It's great. And you could do it in the Andrew Garfield universe, and you could introduce those guys in the Andrew Garfield movie and have him be fighting with them. Then you can have them, you know, off on their own adventures. That's a fun one. If done well and made genuinely funny. This is something that the audience would be like, oh, cool. Yeah. I read those books, or I heard those books were really good. Cool. Additionally, Manwolf. Sony owns Manwolf. Manwolf is J. Jonah Jameson's son, John Jameson. And his book is pretty awesome. My father, Mr. D. Schneider, is a huge Manwolf fan. I actually inherited from him a piece of Marv Wolfman art from the end of a Manwolf cover. The Manwolf is out for your stinking blood. The Manwolf really has his own backstory and everything. He's got this like gem that's like in his throat and gives him this power, turns him into a werewolf. It's some really cool sci-fi space werewolf shit. And if they made it genuinely scary and genuinely cool, they could do something great. An appearance by Michael Morbius would be appropriate here. You know, you've got the beginnings of a little horror stable of characters here in the universe. So is Venom, you know, like there's some things that you guys could do and set up here. If you get Manwolf going, and Manwolf has just tons of source material that people really like. Granted, you know, Manwolf hasn't been a popular character for a long time, but still the material is there to find, is genuinely good, or some of it anyway. And like there's some great visuals at the very least, you know, Marv Wolfman art and whatnot. And the themes, the genre bending, sci-fi, horror, it's great. Great ingredients for the stew that you're trying to make with a Spider-Verse, right? Okay. Also, Silver Sable and Wild Pack. They wanted to do Silver Sable and Black Cat. Silver Sable and Wild Pack. Silver Sable is the leader of a mercenary team, and she is like the Punisher, but a chick. She's like the Punisher with tits, but for hire, and like, you know, super, super tough and like over the top. Like that was the thing. She was really over the top. And to do an over the top action movie with Silver Sable and the Wild Pack, it's really, it could be very fun. It could be awesome. There's some really great stuff with them in the comics, and they, the source material's there, and there's a fan base for that stuff. And, yeah, you know, it's really up to you guys to make something awesome. But when you do something like it's Silver Sable and Black Cat, and that's not anything that there's any basis in the comics, basically shows us, the audience, that you have no faith in what you're putting out there. And you're hedging your bets versus Silver Sable and Wild Pack. Yeah, there's some great comics. Really thought we could do something great with the idea. And when we cast so-and-so, we knew we had it fucking all worked out, right? That's what it should be. Anyway, I'm getting towards the end of my suggestions here. But look at this. Look at what they have to do. I mean, like, you know, the early stuff that I said is really like, some of the best. It's like just taking everything that's already working for them and continuing it. But Manwolf could be cool. Superior Foes of Spider-Man could be cool. Silver Sable and Wild Pack could be cool. Also, or alternatively, if they wanted to get a new Spider-Man in there in an interesting way, they could do the Clone Saga. And they could have a brainwashed dude who the audience knows is a clone, dealing with like all this life shit, and confusion and build up to a confrontation with Tom Holland's Spider-Man. And honestly, they could do it like in multiple, you know, they could do a trilogy with that. You know, you go, the first movie is this guy, he's Spider-Man, and by the time the movie ends, he's like, oh shit, I'm not Spider-Man, that guy's Spider-Man. And then you do a sequel film where, you know, he's wrestling with this and dealing with various things and trying to be his, and maybe there's an appearance by Tom Holland, Spider-Man, or whatever it is. And then you lead to a third movie where these two have a confrontation. And he's just like, sorry, dude, like, you know, you don't even look like me. You know, they just used my DNA to make you, you know, thing, and they gave you my memories and blah, 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 blah. You know, you aren't me, man. I think that could actually be very cool. An interesting way for them to do the get another Spider-Man, have it mean something. You know, the Ben Reilly Spider-Man, there's been plenty of just stories that have really made the Clone Saga look good. The real problem with the Clone Saga at the time was that it never ended. It went on forever. They made them like keep it going. It was supposed to end relatively quickly. I don't remember how many issues or something, but it wasn't going to last even close to as long as it did, and it went on for just years. But still, after the fact, lots of people have utilized the story and aspects of the story to good effect. And the Scarlet Spider, Kane, all these characters that they own from the Spider-Man verse connected to the Clone Saga, well, you can't really use any of those guys unless you open the door up to the Clone Saga. So there you go. And three films, you could make something happen there. And depending on, you know, you really got to read the audience and whatnot, but, you know, you can now have another Spider-Man in the Spider-Man universe. You could also have the other Spider-Man be the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man or any other thing. You'd have to be the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man. You could do it in a lot of different ways. And then you've got a new Spider-Man, you know, like, so there's a lot of cool ways to do this here. Finally, I just want to mention, it wasn't very popular comic book, but I loved it. It's called The Slingers, and they own The Slingers, Sony. Slingers were four characters who all got a hold of these alternative Spider-Man costumes that weren't really Spider-Man costumes. Spider-Man decided to, like, go undercover kind of thing, and he was the Hornet, he was Ricochet, he was Dusk, and he was Prodigy. And all four of these costumes I really like. I used to draw them all the time. Not the black one, Dusk, so much, but they all had something kind of cool about them. And I don't know how you necessarily introduce it is the problem, because the storyline's kind of a weird one. It was about Spider-Man trying out a whole different bunch of costumes and doing the thing. I mean, actually, to some degree, it could be a cool Spider-Man story arc, and then, like, you know, I mean, like, movie, like, do a movie where he's, like, trying all these different costumes and stuff. It's a little bit of a bummer when you haven't seen Spider-Man fight so many villains, and then, like, he would be in alternative costumes. So it's like you don't necessarily want to see it happen anytime soon. But The Slingers is pretty cool. I think eventually it'd be worth to doing something with Slingers at Sony. But really, like, get all this shit going, okay? Miles Morales, number one with a bullet. 2099 Spidey, number two, okay? And then Andrew Garfield, I'm thinking with Black Cat, and, you know, some other villains would be good too. And continue the Raimi universe to head towards Spider-Girl. Dude, like, do both those things. You know, after the success of that Spider-Man movie, you know, people would love a conclusion to the Tobey Maguire universe. Who was the fan favorite? It was Andrew Garfield. Put Andrew Garfield with Black Cat. Make that shit happen. And then give Gwen Stacy a try for Spider-Gwen. Give Spider-Man Noir a try. Give Superior Foes of Spider-Man a try after you hopefully introduce them in one of these things here. Try the Man-Wolf. Really think Man-Wolf is a great one to go with. And Silver Sable and Wild Pack.
could be cool. Spider-Ham, animated film. Clone Saga, at some point. Maybe Slingers. All right. Anyway, guys, I love you so much. If you're music fans like me, I do a new music show. My podcast every Monday night. All Your Favorite Bands Suck. I just did Lonely Island this past week. Humor, punk rock, rap music, all the stuff that isn't necessarily lifted up by the mainstream and given as much attention as it deserves, I'm giving attention to on my show. Anyway, it's a super positive show about music. I love music and I love to share it with people. So come listen to me every Monday. It's wherever you can find podcasts and stuff. Anyway, you've been listening to The Coolest Geek Alive. I hope you will join me again next time on another awesome episode. But I should tell you to email me at jesseblaze@jessesnyder.com with questions, comments, concerns, anything. Tell me how much you love me. Tell me how much you hate me. I can take it. I love hearing from you. Anyway, thank you all for listening to my show. And I hope you'll join me again next Wednesday and this coming Saturday for another fucking ass-kicking episode of The Coolest Geek Alive. Love ya. Peace. You've been listening to Coolest Geek Alive with me, your host, Jesse Blaze Snyder. Don't forget to rate, comment, and subscribe for more excellent geek culture content. Thanks for listening. It's my favorite part! Coolest alive. It's gonna be fucking awesome. Stay with your tribe. It's gonna be fucking awesome. Revenge of the Geeks. It's gonna be fucking awesome. Week after weeks. It's gonna be fucking awesome. Laughing with you. It's gonna be fucking awesome. And crying sometimes too. It's gonna be fucking awesome. Spilling it out. It's gonna be fucking awesome. Making you shout. It's gonna be fucking awesome. Talking some shit. It's gonna be fucking awesome. Living the shit. My voice is gonna be so fucking awesome. Food in our mouth. It's gonna be fucking awesome. Getting them out. It's gonna be listen fucking to the awesome. Reverb. Tell all your friends. It's gonna be fucking awesome. Call right our text. It's gonna be fucking star. Awesome. Raising the bar.
Fucking awesome. Fucking awesome. It's gotta be fucking awesome. Just wait. You'll see. You'll all see.
You'll all see. The Podcast Playground. All right.